Thank you everyone for showing up today. Not because it's me who is teaching today, just because the showing up means a lot for all humans, right? There's another more heart that wants to achieve freedom for the sake of everyone else. So that's always very, very encouraging and very hopeful to see how people are committed to freeing their own hearts and developing compassion and wisdom. So I would like for us first to see if you can. I was thinking of gazing at the screen to see each one of you that are present, those that are on camera, so you can nurture by their warm hearts. I don't know if you can see that on their eyes. The screens are very small. The squares of everyone are tiny, but just taking in the presence of each one of us today here. Because it's about all of us. It's about community and just appreciating everyone. If you cannot gaze at the eyes, read their names and just take that into your heart. And don't be shy. Nobody will know you're gazing at them. Yeah, so I'm taking that in, and and thank you for welcoming me into your homes, because I can a little piece of you. So will you please be so kind to us, write on the chat, maybe where do you live, if you think relevant, where were you born, and one thing that you are bringing today here, you know, an emotion, just expectation, or a physical pain, whatever is present. We welcome everything and every part of you. And you're invited to read other people, what other people are bringing, you know, from challenges of the heart to curiosity, busyness, rest, discernment, eager to learn, openness to change, bringing an open heart. So thank you, beautiful hearts, and so if you don't mind, I would like to start where we're still getting some of your, what are you bringing here, and you're still welcome to read. I would like to start with a 3-minute just grounding, and then I will give a short or long talk, I don't know, and then I will lead you through a meditation, if that's okay. So if you would like to just be where you are, wherever you are, and just if you feel comfortable, you can shut your eyes or just lower your gaze. And allow yourself to feel the groundedness, to feel the ground with your feet or legs or buttock. Just being aware of your body on earth, and letting all preoccupations stay at the door. We'll get back to them. We'll have enough time for that. And let's make together three deep, long breaths. A communal breathing. I'm breathing in all the good intentions that everyone brought. And maybe the pain and the preoccupations of others as well. And turning everything into light in your heart and breathing out. Exhalation of releasing, of softening, of brightening. So thank you now for this tiny little grounding. So I want to read you something. Whenever a person's lack of shame offends you, you should immediately ask yourself, so it is possible for there to be no shameless people in the world? It isn't, and you should therefore stop demanding the impossible. He's just one of those shameless people who must necessarily exist in the world. You should keep the same thought readily available for when you are faced with devious and untrustworthy people, and people who are flawed in any way. As soon as you remind yourself that it's impossible for such people not to exist, you'll be kinder to each and every one of them. It's also helpful immediately to consider what virtue nature has granted us human beings to deal with any given offense, like gentleness, for instance, to counter discourteous people. So you might be wondering, like, what Dharma teacher wrote that, or what Lama? No, it was 2 millennia before, maybe 500 years after the Buddha, but 2 millennia before the culture that we live in, the internet, the infatuated queer teenager turned a Roman emperor and Stoic philosopher Marcus Aurelius. So he wrote this in the year 120, between the year 120 and 180. So I think he was already addressing equanimity. And today I wanted to talk about equanimity. Not only about equanimity, it's just came up for me on the past few weeks. I've been very amazed and surprised how all the teachings, all the Buddhist teachings, are interrelated and interconnected, and one depends on the other and the other on one. So I would mainly wanted to bring to you the concept that in Pali is called upekkha. You don't need to know that or write that down or anything. Equanimity has so much for me relation to right view or right understanding or right thought, which is one, the first of the Noble Eightfold Path. So when we realize there's suffering, when the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, and he said there's suffering and there should be a way out of it, and this is the recipe. And the recipe is these eight steps. And the first step is right view. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then I don't know if you have heard also the teachings of the second arrow, the ones that, you know, there's physical pain, and then I start whining that, why me? Why now? I'm not going to be able to get over this, and it sucks, and I don't like it, and why did it happen, and how come I did? So that's the second arrow, right? There's the unavoidable pain, and then the second arrow is the arrow that we apply to ourselves. So I've always been curious about equanimity and how can you deal with it. So it said that equanimity is having a very balanced state of mind, is keeping a sense of calm, or when one remains unshaken by the ups and the downs of life. So we are kind of like this, right? Not flat, I will talk a little bit, but we are basically free from wanting, from clinging, free from pushing away or aversion, and free from partiality. So we end up being even-mindedness. So we don't have preferences. So I don't prefer this more than that. So if I get that as opposed to this, I don't get disappointed. But I want to be very clear, equanimity does not imply indifference. Because sometimes people think, oh, that must be so boring, right? To never get too excited, to never be too sad or in pain. Yes, we can get excited. We can suffer. We get also pulled down by sadness and what disappointment, whatever it's around. But we have a more wise and compassionate response to whatever's happening with us and to the world. So do you never want things to be different? Have you ever, I'm fine with everything. I don't care. No, that's kind of apathy, right? We usually always want things to be different. We always want things to change. That's what we came here today, right? Because we want to be better. We want to do better in the world. We want to connect more with ourselves. So this is a little bit of a controversial thing. Let's practice equanimity and then let's care about things. So how can I care about things and at the same time be equanimous? Is it possible that peace coexist with the desire for change? This is especially important for activists, right? That it's a huge challenge for activists, that if you want to be a Dharma practitioner and be an activist at the same time, then you're not gonna get furious, you're not gonna, try to fight for change. Yes, it can be possible. Because we all want the world to be a better world for us, for ourselves, for everyone else. We want to change. We want to have a better health. We want to have better personal relationships. We aim for better political outcomes, for more equality in our society, for a more equity economy. So yes, there is a need and a willing for change. And at the same time, there is a very powerful tool on learning and knowing to accept the things as they are. So the term acceptance has a lot to do with equanimity. I remember when I started in Buddhism, there was a very a book that was recommended that the title was something like Seeing Things Clearly or See Things as They Are. And I felt like, I don't get it. What it is about? I see my bottle of water. I see my bottle of water. What would be the difference, right? And seeing things clearly, it's basically knowing and getting to know. It's so much related to the right view. And right view in Buddhism, it has to do with understanding reality as it is, which contains the three characteristics of existence, which is basically, everything changes. Nothing is permanent. So I would know, oh, one day my bottle won't work, or, you know, maybe it will start leaking, or it will go bad, or I might lost it, or it might get taken. The things don't have a self essence, right? And there is dissatisfaction, you know, in the nature of everything. So if we are clear about that, then there won't be that violent collision between my expectations and reality, right? Because, my bottle broke. Yeah, I knew it was breakable since the moment I got it. I knew it was breakable. I'm not seeing this as the source of my happiness, the source of my freedom, the source or my whatever, my partner or my job or my, is the source of my eternal, you know, freedom and happiness. No, I know it's temporary. I know it will bring dissatisfaction. I know it's a bottle now, and tomorrow it will be pieces of whatever material it is or whatever. So in that way, we will avoid shooting to ourselves the second arrow of pain. Of, yeah, besides the pain of losing my bottle, then I'm not going to start, oh, I didn't know it was going to, you know, fail. And why did they leave me? Or why did my job, you know, is not giving me the rewards and the fulfillment that I hoped it was going to give me? Or I got this career, or I got this other thing. Because we don't set expectations, unreal expectations. So I'm sure you have heard the, you know, I don't know if it's a kind of a prayer or a, you know, the serenity prayer, which is the paradox of equanimity and change. I'm sure everybody had read it, but I want to remind you. That is the prayer to God, to ask God to grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, taking this world as it is, not as I would love or want it to be. So I see in this prayer, you know, it's got to do, God, maybe just God, grant me the wisdom to see things as they are. Grant me the capability to have right view, right understanding, right? And so I can know the difference. As an activist, for example, I can see the things as they are, okay? So I don't like the things as they are. I'm accepting they are like this. And then I'm going to do the things that can be, that can lead to change. But then I'm not going to get triggered or frustrated. Maybe we get anger sometimes, and we use the energy from anger to then do whatever we can do to change, right? But not to harm ourselves or to harm others. And it has a lot to do with accepting the things they are at every single moment, you know, this moment. And what can I do this moment, exactly this moment? If there's nothing I can do right now, then why suffer? Why, you know, beating myself more? If there's nothing to do right now, I can plan to do something further. So, I was, you know, I was reading some not Dharma books or anything. I was reading more literary and poets and writers from the past, and I just came a lot of the way they have thought or written, very aligned with this concept of equanimity and having a right view. Actually, Maria Popova said that the vast majority of our mental, emotional, and spiritual suffering comes from the false expectations that we have on regards to reality. And then she said, as we dust ourselves off amid the rubble, bruised and indignant, we further pain ourselves. So this is the second arrow, right? And then she continues, the remedy, of course, is not to bend the reality. The remedy is to adjust our expectations to reality. And I want to insist, it doesn't mean, there's nothing I can do, then I rest. You know, if somebody's disrespecting me and there's nothing I can do, no, we need to set boundaries. We need to protect ourselves. We need to set boundaries in the world. You know, we need to fight for the environment, for justice, for equanimity, for equality, but with a more settled, wise, and compassionate heart. So for that, right view makes a huge difference. And I always wonder, you know, like, how do you cultivate equanimity? Like, it's very hard. It's like if you're in a bad mood and then I tell you, oh, come on, get yourself in a better mood. Like, that's impossible. You know, whenever I'm in a bad mood and someone tells me, get in a better mood, I go in a worst mood. So it's not easy to teach, I think, equanimity. But I have a couple of maybe tricks that we can use or ideas. So before that, I just want to bring a thought by Thich Nhat Hanh that you might have already heard, and why it's so important, equanimity. And he titled this Calm in the Storm. So he said, because when he was living in Vietnam and so many people needed to flee away in boats, he said, I like to use the example of a small boat crossing the Gulf of Siam. In Vietnam, there are many people called boat people who leave the country in small boats. Often the boats are caught in rough seas or storms. The people may panic and boats may sink. By the way, I recommend you to watch the movie The Swimmers, about two, I think they are Syrian women, sisters, swimmers, that I really loved it. Anyways, I will continue. But if even one person aboard can remain calm, lucid, knowing what to do and what not to do, he or she can help the boat survive. His or her expression, her face, her voice communicates clarity and calmness. And people have trust in that person. They will listen to what he or she says. One such person can save the lives of many. So that's why equanimity, you know, it's not that we're faced all the time in these kind of situations. But, you know, sometimes, you know, at work, at home, when we get a really, really terrible news and everybody goes crazy and nobody knows how to deal with it. So it is very important where we place our attention, right? And what we practice here every Sunday or every day or every month, I don't know, hopefully more often than every month, is attention, where to focus our attention. That's what we practice when we sit in silence on our butt and just pay attention to the breath. We are cultivating our attention. Why? Because we want to be the owners of our thinking. We want to be the guides. We want to be like the pilot of the plane. As William James said, you know, in the dawn of modern psychology, with radical assertion, that our experience is what we agree to attend to. So whatever you are paying attention now, that is your experience. That is everything that exists for you now in this moment. So I was saying I wanted to bring a trick on how to become equanimous, how to love everyone as if everyone else is somebody you really love, and not treat your loved ones as your loved ones and treat others as if they are others. Because the other aspect of equanimity is not just being, I'm cool and calm, is, yeah, I'm cool and calm and loving and compassionate and caring with my daughters, as well as with the daughters of somebody I've never met. I don't care where they live, how different they are, how far away they are. That's also equanimity. Equanimity is not having a preference of, oh yeah, I like these, but just because they give me pleasure, just because they benefit me. No, I'm wise enough to understand everyone is as human as I am. Everyone wants to be free. Everyone wants to be happy. Everyone wants to be loved. So why am I just choosing, you know, ones or others? And I'm disregarding the ones that are not as close to me. So a friend of mine wrote, when she was helping her daughter with her second baby that, you know, was born, she came to me and told me, oh, it would be so funny if at the hospital they would have exchanged the babies, right? And so she's a storyteller. So she ended up, you know, being hired by Netflix, and she wrote this series that is called, in Spanish, it's called Madre Solo Hay Dos. Like in Spanish, there's a saying that mothers, there's only one. And the title of this series is Mothers, There's Only Two. And in English, I think it's called Daughter from Another Mother, something, or yeah, Daughter from Another Mother, something like that. So it happens that at the hospital, they exchange the babies from two mothers, you know, from two very different socioeconomic levels and values and cultures and everything. So the mother who took her, each one of the moms took her baby home and fell in love with their baby because it was their baby, right? And then after, I don't know, a few days, maybe not weeks, they, you know, at the hospital, they informed them, you know, you have the wrong baby. There was, it's a comedy. So there was a switch. So the moms are already in love with the babies they took home with them, although they are not their daughters, right? So I thought, oh my God, you know, it would be wonderful to think that way always, you know. If I thought, oh, that person far away there who I considered a total stranger, what if they were my child and they were taken away by mistake? So why not? You know, I'm just very fixated with this one because I think she is my daughter, right? But why if I think else is my daughter? Or I was saying that I probably already talked a lot, and and if people want to settle in a posture where you can rest for 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes. How long are you used to sitting? 20 or 45 minutes? Okay, we'll do 30 then. Thank you. So, yeah, just place yourself, hopefully, in a very comfortable and ease posture, but where you can still be awake, alert, alive, and vivid, and follow the sound of the bell as far as you can. And while listening to the fading of the bell, allow the muscles of your body to relax. Settling your body, settling your respiration with three cleansing breaths. And reflecting on the benefits of a mind that has this quality of balance and equanimity that is nurtured by wisdom and by compassion. Sense what a gift it can be to bring a peaceful heart to the world, to your world, inside and outside. Let yourself feel an inner sense of balance and ease. So physical balance might help our mental balance, and mental balance might help our emotional balance. So what we are doing here, it's already promoting equanimity just by settling our bodies in an upright position with a straight back, but not tight, and an open and soft front of the body to allow the chest to allow more space to the heart. And to the lungs, to the respiration. And I invite you to settle your awareness in a space that is larger than your body mind. That it's not configured by your personality or your personal history. Do not identify it with what you usually identify it as, me, mine. It's a wider, a simply luminous, a spacious, a cognizant space. Go from this perspective. Note if you have any tendency to develop a relationship of I eat with yourself. Like, do you ever look down upon yourself? Of low esteem, or a sense that this person that I find here right now is worthless, or this person's loser, or it's a disappointment. Do you ever flatten yourself into an it? You know, as if you were an object, and furthermore, a disagreeable object. I do myself, sadly. But it can be brutal, because that's when we are abandoning empathy for ourselves. So we're losing the equanimity towards ourselves. So if we're wise enough and compassionate enough, we will always view ourselves as loving and deserving of love, of freedom. So now consider then a connection to the oneself beyond all the facades, beyond all the appearances as we conceive, as we view ourselves, sometimes with all the facades of sometimes I'm agreeable or disagreeable, uplifting or disappointing. And explore the possibility of an I, you, as opposed to an I, it. So it's I, you relationship with yourself. As if you were that baby that you think it's yours. You know, we are our own toddlers. We still are those babies. The thing is, our body is larger and our face changed, but we're still those babies. So explore the possibility of feeling, of seeing yourself as a sentient being, constantly in the pursuit of happiness and freedom from suffering. So whenever there is a disappointment from your side because you were confused, you were not clear. We all do things because we think that will lead us to happiness. That's why right view helps, but we are still humans. And we, as any other being, are worthy to have these aspirations fulfilled. However misguided we are sometimes. So if you try to cultivate more the relationship with I, you, so me, you as opposed to me, it, the relationship with yourself, maybe you can symbolically visualize the dimension of a luminous awareness, a pristine or an orb of light at your heart. And with each out-breath, Breathe out the light of affection, the light of kindness. The light of love. And with each in-breath, imagine compassionately, maybe absorbing or drawing in the darkness of all that obscures your genuine happiness and fulfillment. Drawing in and just changing that into light at the center of your heart, because your heart changes everything into light. We have that capability. And you can use this phrase or just create your personal phrase, one that resonates more with you. And maybe say, may this person with whom I identify, may this person become free. And you can change to whatever. May this person finds healing or love or wisdom. So now let's our awareness or your awareness travel and move on to people you know, either personally or you have heard about them on saw them on social media, and attend closely and see if there is a tendency from your side to see them as it. You know, as objects or as an I-it relationship towards those you find agreeable, towards those to whom you might have a strong attachment, which there are many very healthy attachments. If you have an I-it relationship, or where there is an attachment where it's more really about you, about how much you enjoy them or how much you feel at ease if you see them. It's not that you love them because of them, but more because they bring you benefits. And this happens as well when we see others as their relationship with them as an I-it, that we view them as simply as somebody that is dislikable, you know, this object that I don't like or annoying or disagreeable. And sometimes you might even look down upon them. And if you get distracted, you know you can always come back to feeling your feet on the floor. So to reconnect, to reground on earth, or your hands on your lap, or your breath. So keep switching your attention between those beings that you might see as a relationship I, it, as opposed to I, a human being. You know, I eat because they bring me, they are agreeable, or because they are disagreeable. We are kind of objectifying them, starting with objectifying ourselves. And while you're still trying to bring the attention back to your center, to your anchor, feet, hands of bread, and if while still practicing this, you find someone else for whom you have aroused such an I-it relationship, either for attachment or for aversion. So I invite you to use your breath to break down those barriers. To see those others as more than just your personal view of them. So with each in-breath and with each out-breath, can you see each one of them, the ones you have aversion towards, or the ones you have attachment towards, as individuals similar to yourself? The same needs, the same yearnings, So let's be creative, let's be playful. So attend closely to this other person until you can see through them, through a dimension that is in commonality with yourself. They share your own deepest aspirations. We all humans have that in common. Every human, no matter their size, their age, their location, their capabilities, every human yearns for true, deep, and lasting happiness and freedom. For love and connection. for a meaningful, healthy, and long life. So let's use some creativity here and see if you try to imagine that you have became lucid and you're no more equivalent to open to one person than another one, and that every person you know, every person you don't know, every person before you got lucid, you like or disliked, every person stands in the same place of your awareness, of your light, and everyone is equal, and everyone deserves equally your care. And you are holding all of them in your awareness with no preference. Maybe they are part of your own lucid dream that you created. They are all held by a single non-local awareness. It's the awareness that we all share. As if we'd have the awareness of an awakened one. So resting for a little bit more on this non-local awareness, or a wider awareness. Where we fundamentally are able to see the unity of yourself and others. With no preference, without clinging to some, without being aversive to others, without being indifferent to the rest. Holding this in your awareness. And if you feel like you might repeat after me or use your own words, like phrases like, may I be balanced and at peace. And acknowledge that all created things and beings pass away. All the joys, all the sorrows, the pleasant events, people, buildings, animals, nations, whole civilizations. And let yourself rest in the midst of them. May I learn to see the arising and the passing away of all nature with equanimity and balance. May I be open and balanced and peaceful. And here comes an important aspect that I will talk a little bit afterwards. Acknowledging that all beings inherit their own karma. They are heirs to their own karma. And that their lives arise and pass away following the conditions and the deeds that they created by them. And while you can deeply love and care for others, in the end, their happiness and their suffering depend on their thoughts and actions. And to find equanimity with others, you can add this phrase. Your happiness and your suffering depend on your thoughts and your actions and not on my wishes for you. May we all learn to see the arising and passing away of all things with equanimity and balance. May we all have true equanimity. May we all be balanced and peaceful. And may we all bring compassion and equanimity to the events of the world. And may we all find balance and equanimity and peace amidst it all. May this practice lead us to greater peace, wisdom, and liberation for the benefit of all beings.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.